In more than 15 years of teaching Pilates, I can honestly say that as much as 60% of my Pilates clientele have had some form of functional scoliosis, whereas nearly 30% have had osteoporosis or osteopenia. And for a very long time, I thought I should be able to do more, be more successful, make more progress, and feel more confident, but instead usually felt lost or unable to affect change, and even a little helpless when it came to these students. To think that we can get by without having a reliable, clear, and easily applicable strategy for working with these two pervasive conditions is crazy and often ends up making us feel inadequate, preventing us from giving our students what they need most to reach their full potential. What I also know, though, is that many, if not most, of you have studied scoliosis and osteoporosis at least a little, meaning you have a basic understanding of what these conditions are and the common contraindications. However, whether or not you've taken the time to study either of these conditions has very little bearing on how confident you are in actually applying the knowledge in a way that is safe, effective, and empowers your students to maximize their strength and flexibility and truly prepares them for the rigors of real life. And that's why we're here. I'm Chantel Lopez. I'm the founder of Skillful Teaching, an international mentoring and educational company that serves Pilates and yoga teachers who want more from their work and their lives. You are listening to three simple rules every Pilates teacher should know when working with scoliotic and osteoporotic students so they never feel unprepared, discouraged, or unsure again. Thanks so much for taking the time to investigate how to be more effective in your teaching when working with your students who have scoliosis and osteoporosis. I believe that what you are about to discover is going to make a significant difference in how you can inspire, motivate, and progress your students no matter what their condition. Well, what I want to share with you today is not a specific protocol, but rather a way to implement any protocol. And yet it is derived from my work with scoliotic and osteoporotic students and stems from the experience that what they really need, what they really benefit from, is a teacher who trusts them and their experience. If that doesn't make sense now, it will soon. But think about how challenging it can be to teach a multi-level class, even a small group class of 3 to 4 students. How to teach a group class with a myriad of different bodies and conditions is one of the top 5 questions I constantly get asked by teachers from around the world. Even seasoned teachers are struggling with this. We want to give our students what they want, but we need to keep them safe. We want to challenge them and yet build a sense of thoughtful and intelligent awareness in their bodies. We want to offer them support and specific corrections without singling them out, and we want to have fun, and we want them to feel good. This is, as you know, not an easy task. And when you add students who have very real and specific needs, the additional challenge is to make them feel seen but not picked on, make them feel taken care of but not alienated, and to address their pain, their challenges, and their goals with care without leaving them behind. There are 3 foundational rules I always follow that over the years have literally made all the difference in how successful I've been when working with students with injury, pain, and illness. Again, they are not clinical protocols, and yet they are as important, if not more, than the what you actually do. These simple rules are about how you do what you do. They guide you, they keep you on track, and they open you up to the richer, deeper aspects of skillful teaching. Are you ready? We're going to work backwards from the 3rd most important rule. The 3rd rule I want you to always follow, one that every Pilates teacher needs to know when working with scoliotic and osteoporotic students so they never feel unprepared, discouraged, or unsure again, is trust what you see. When we begin teaching, trusting ourselves in general can be difficult to do. We feel a little like imposters. Who the hell gave us permission to be in charge anyway? We struggle with reconciling our technique with our intuition. It's hard enough to take the exercises and apply them in the beginning, let alone analyze the movement we see. But it is actually easier than we think. It just takes trusting ourselves, but more than that, trusting what we see. You might be thinking that, well, that's all fine and good, but what am I looking at? What does it mean? You might be asking yourself, sure, I see something, but I don't even have the knowledge or experience to do anything about it. And if you think that, I'm going to flat out tell you that you're wrong. I have sometimes compared developing this kind of trust to drinking wine. When you begin to drink wine, and inevitably someone asks you what kind of wine you like, and you say, I don't know anything about wine. The truth is, you know exactly what you like. You just have to trust your experience. You don't need fancy words like terroir or Beaujolais, or understand what bricks are, or the difference between Malbec or Nebbiolo. None of that matters at all when you trust your experience, in this case, what you taste. Do you like red or white? Do you like your wine to taste like fruit or dirt? Do you hate it when it tastes metallic, or are you into that? Do you like your wine cold or room temperature? What you like has nothing to do with how much you know about wine. It's the same with what you see. When you see a body, when you watch it move, what do you see? Is it leaning over? Is it twisting in a particular direction? Is it efforting in a specific area? Do you see that the knees don't straighten at the same time, that your student's head always turns to the left? In the last 2 years, I've been exploring the work of acupuncturist and osteopath Philip Beach, author of Muscles and Meridians, The Manipulation of Shape. His work with contractile fields, a framework based on evolutionary biology and embryonic development, is complex stuff. And yet one of my biggest takeaways was when he told us to start with aesthetics. Begin your analysis of the body with deciding what looks good or bad, malformed, misaligned, stuck, stiff, beautiful, fluid, sloppy, disorganized, etc. Even having more than 20 years of teaching experience under my belt, when I heard him say that, I felt a huge sigh of relief. Because, like many of you, I often feel like I need to know way more than I do to feel like I can do a good job with my students. Well, that too is total baloney. One of our primary jobs is to bring whole body balance back to the body, to bring it back to center. Our job is also to make the body work more effortlessly and efficiently. When we're talking about scoliosis or osteoporosis, we also need to know what our specific goals are. For scoliosis, we want to realign the body, balance the strength, create space and mobility. For osteoporosis, we're looking to find and create better posture and alignment so as to reduce the likelihood of fracture and develop greater strength to support and build the bones. If we know these simple things and we can trust what we see, we can easily and quickly make adjustments for our students to help them feel better and get stronger. Let your eyes guide you. Besides that, it's always going to be a matter of trial and error. No matter how long you've been teaching, you can be guaranteed that you are not always going to get it right. But you can continue to trust yourself, trust what you see, watch carefully, and be willing to explore with your student. Here's an example of what I mean. A teacher is standing at the foot of the reformer looking over the footbar at their student doing footwork. You see something like the knees not straightening at the same time, or one heel staying elevated, or the foot rolling in or out, or perhaps the shoulders tensing. I think for most of us, what we do is we look for the reason before we trust simply what we see and guide the student back to balance or center. If the knees are not straightening all the way, it doesn't matter if you know what muscles are responsible or what the trigger point is or why it's happening at all. What matters is that you see a pattern and you can give the student a very simple and thoughtful corrective action. If the right knee doesn't straighten as soon as the left, ask them to put more weight in the right foot. Ask them to straighten the right knee a little sooner or a little faster. If you see one foot rolling in or out, simply ask them to shift the way they're bearing weight. You can continue to guide them in this direction until you see not perfect balance, because that's not typically what's going to happen, but greater balance and greater awareness. Trusting what we see can be an incredibly powerful tool that allows us to get out of our own way. It allows us to bypass the ego, the one that tells us we need to know exactly why that's happening, what muscle's responsible, where the tightness is, where the weakness is, what pattern is generating that movement. And we stop trusting what we see and simply guiding our student back to center. This is what teaching is about, after all. Exploration, curiosity, and diligence. We're going to be going into much more detail around this specific topic in the upcoming scoliosis and osteoporosis workshop I'm hosting in Sacramento at Humani Pilates. But for now, I want to share the second rule you should know and follow if you want to experience success in your teaching. The second most important rule every Pilates teacher needs to know and follow when working with scoliotic or osteoporotic students so they never feel unprepared, discouraged, or unsure again is ask for and trust your students' feedback. I have always been a huge proponent of something called student-centered learning. After many years of studying this approach from the learning perspective, I started to look at it from the teacher's perspective about 5 years ago. Ultimately, teachers who use the student-centered method of teaching versus those who don't is the single most important difference between those teachers who get results, are able to motivate their students, and keep their students for the long term, and those who don't. It's likely that many of you intuitively do this a little bit, but not purposefully, with the deliberate goal of creating a more trusting teacher-student relationship and therefore cultivating greater loyalty and motivation, or as a means of more effectively progressing your students in the appropriate direction. What is student-centered teaching or learning? It's a deep and expansive topic. It looks at social, cultural influences, inner and outer environment, cognitive function, and active versus passive participation, to name just a few elements. For our purposes, we can focus on environment, active learning, and the brain-body connection. Because student-centered teaching emphasizes the student as an active participant, it is particularly powerful in teaching movement. Now, as we work to encourage and elicit certain patterns in the body, we can utilize this turnaround in our use of imagery and metaphor, tactile cueing, demonstration, and orientation. Essentially, we want the student to be our guide, to be at the center of the experience, even when we are dealing with complex issues like scoliosis and osteoporosis. As I mentioned before, teaching is about trial and error, so even when you have all the best tools, all the most current data and information, you still don't know what exactly is going to work. And your student is always going to know what correction, realignment, or movement feels like in their body better than you. And they can't always tell you what the experience is actually creating. Therefore, your eyes and their internal experience are the two pieces of the puzzle that absolutely have to be present for successful learning and teaching. Here's a specific example of one thing I suggest you do in order to practice student-centered teaching. Ask your student to notice. Don't tell them to change. When trying to re-educate, a powerful tool is asking the student to actively notice where their body is in space, how it feels given a certain movement phase or sequence, and what they might do differently. Evoke a sense of curiosity and awareness in order to reinforce what you see and what you want them to achieve or retain for the long term. Here's an example. In plank position, ask your student, what could you do differently with your neck here? Or how could you make this feel better in your neck and shoulders? How could you bring more space in your rib cage in every direction? When you do X, and be specific, what does your X, choose a body part, feel like? Do you feel more able to name the movement or the level of sensation or activation that you're hoping your student has or will achieve? When your students correct from a place of internal awareness rather than your constant prompting, they are more equipped to make those corrections when you're not around and to gradually maintain the corrections so they become unconscious and integrated. When it comes to working with your scoliotic students, this rule is going to be incredibly powerful because scoliosis often causes pain, but not always. With our scoliosis students, as well as those with osteopenia or osteoporosis, we can still be gauging the success of our instruction by making sure that the student is not only cognizant of the results each movement produces, but also that they appreciate, connect to, if not love, the way it makes them feel, so they will have a strong desire to keep doing it. And, of course, this form of checks and balances keeps us and our students engaged in the moment and making sure we are on track. The most important thing about this rule, however, is that if you use it well and consistently, you don't actually have to know any fancy protocols for your students. You, of course, need to know contraindications and the overarching movement goals for the student's specific needs in order to keep them safe, but it doesn't have to be complex. Trust what you see and ask for and trust your students' feedback. If more teachers did this, and I'm going to teach you how to do exactly these things in September in Sacramento, more teachers would welcome the opportunity to work with scoliosis and osteoporosis because they would trust themselves and therefore be able to always progress their students toward their greatest potential. Which leads me to the most important rule every Pilates teacher needs to know and follow when working with scoliotic and osteoporotic students so they never feel unprepared, discouraged, or unsure again. And that is, keep your students progressing. I'm super tempted to add no matter what to the end of this, but I did feel like we might misinterpret that to mean at all costs, which is certainly not what I mean. But I do mean to keep your students progressing is the primary goal of teaching. This rule, although the absolutely most powerful rule of all, doesn't work unless we do the other two first. Because whenever we're working with students with limitations, illness, or specific needs, we must first and foremost be aware of their safety and applying the appropriate movements to the body in front of us. And yet, if we don't make use of rule number one, our students will not improve. They will not feel motivated, inspired, experience increased vitality, joy, strength, or flexibility in movement over time. Nor will they stick around for very long unless they continue to see progress. This is not only a place where teachers fail their students with scoliosis and osteoporosis, it is the primary reason teachers fail, period. There are so many gifted and talented teachers out there, have no doubt about it, but many, if not most of them, are coming to teaching with an underlying sense of fear. They're afraid of hurting their students, doing something wrong, increasing their students' pain, not helping them reach their goals, and afraid, I think, that if they don't get their students to move perfectly, they've failed. It's this fear that also keeps them from holding the bigger picture, looking ahead at all the things their students could become capable of over time. I teach this concept in the Pure Potential Advanced Repertoire Workshop, an online course presented by Skillful Teaching that you can access if you want to learn more. What's crucial here is that we don't take our students' limitations and turn them into who they are or what they are ultimately capable of. Yes, they may have scoliosis or osteoporosis, but they also have a freaking life. Get them out of pain? Yes. Keep them safe? Yes, obviously. Hold them back with basic, small, unintegrated corrective movements forever? Absolutely not. In my opinion, and in my relatively extensive experience working with all kinds of bodies, this is our number one goal as teachers. Progress our students to experience their absolute greatest potential, no matter what their level of pain, their illness, or their injury. Too often we lose sight of this potential even from the first session. We think, this student is going to need small, delicate, modified exercises pretty much always. And if we believe that, then we are cutting ourselves off from showing them what their bodies are capable of, and that's like holding them hostage to their condition. That's like saying you have scoliosis so you won't ever be as strong as somebody without it. Or because you have osteoporosis, you'll never be as healthy as someone without it. You could say this about any condition, not just these two. Of course, the reality is that some people will never do jackknife or twist or teaser, but who cares? The point is that if you treat them as if they are lacking, you are eliminating the possibility that they will ever be as great as they possibly can. You will be holding them hostage to their condition. What I'm recommending is not that you work unrealistically or unsafely. That's why we must know the foundational contraindications and basic protocols, but it doesn't have to be complex. As I've said before, if you practice the first two rules, this rule makes the perfect third point of a very solid approach for working with every student. Here's what you can do to keep your students progressing. Always look for ways to take them deeper and further, ways to challenge their abilities within the safe framework of their condition. Assess and reassess frequently, so you and they know exactly where they are and where you're going. Don't be afraid to challenge them. Don't be afraid to evoke sensation. Don't let them rely on props forever. And this is a major piece of what we're going to be talking about in the live workshop in September. Props are wonderful, but they should not be, in most cases, the goal. The goal is to use a prop to help your student progress, to improve, to inform them how they can get there themselves without the crutch. You can ask them what they would most like to achieve and find the ways to help them achieve it. And this goes to our second rule. And track what you do so you know where you are and can formulate a plan for moving them ahead. I realize that all three of these rules seem independently unrelated to scoliosis and osteoporosis, but they aren't. They are necessary for working with all of our students, but absolutely crucial for students with any condition. I feel incredibly confident that if you apply these rules to your teaching today, you will feel more confident, more prepared, and less discouraged on a regular basis, and you will have not even needed to leave your home, car, or your studio. And I also know that this is just the tip of the iceberg. Just think of what it would be like to learn how to apply these tools directly to your students with scoliosis and osteoporosis, navigating each of them with a specific and trusted protocol that addresses the direct needs of these conditions. How can you trust what you see in a scoliotic body? How can you progress your students with osteoporosis? How can you apply a repetitive and powerful framework to each of these conditions with the explicit goal of trusting what you see, asking for and trusting your students' feedback, and progress your students toward their greatest potential? If you would like to apply these three rules to your students with scoliosis and osteoporosis, I highly recommend you join us from 1 to 5 p.m. on Saturday, September 19th and Saturday, September 26th for a total of 8 hours of exploration, dialogue, and learning that is bound to change the way you approach teaching all of your students, but give you specific and direct insight to those with scoliosis and osteoporosis. This workshop is perfect for those of you who have had a little bit of education and training on how to work with scoliosis and osteoporosis, but want to really step into feeling more confident and more comfortable with working with these students and find ways to consistently make progress. If you attend the live workshop, you're going to get the entire course in an online version, which is going to include downloadable videos and downloadable PDFs of all the printed material. Now, if you're going to attend live or you want the online version, you're going to want to register before August 15th, which is a little less than 2 weeks, depending on when you are listening to this podcast. When you register before August 15th, you're going to save $50 on the course cost, which after the 15th is $347. It's still a total steal given the fact that you're going to be able to take all of the video and material home with you. Now, in the course, you're going to get an awesome and unique but highly practical approach to scoliosis and osteoporosis. You're going to learn an integrative way to apply what you already know, plus get lots of great new information. 8 hours of inspiring interaction with other teachers, plus all the video, and earn 8 PMA CECs if you're in the live version and 6 PMA CECs for the online version. So here's what you need to do now. You can go directly to my website and register for either version at skillfulteaching.com/workshops-and-retreats. You're going to want to scroll down till you see the September workshop. You can follow the link that was provided in the email or post where you found this podcast, which will also take you directly to the registration page. If you want to learn more about the beautiful studio where this workshop's happening, you can go to humanistudios.com. That's H-U-M-A-N-I studios.com. The workshop is coming up pretty soon, and the early bird deadline is even sooner. So if you think this stuff is valuable and interesting, I encourage you to take action right now where you're feeling inspired. You are, of course, welcome to reach out to me with questions at chantill@skillfulteaching.com. That's C-H-A-N-T-I-L-L at skillfulteaching.com. You're going to also want to stay tuned for an upcoming interview podcast with PT and Master Pilates teacher Lindy Royer on the topic of working with scoliosis and osteoporosis in the Pilates environment. Lindy is the owner of Park Meadow Pilates near Denver, Colorado, a Balanced Body faculty member, and an incredibly gifted master-level Pilates teacher that has a huge variety of tools at her disposal. You're definitely not going to want to miss that interview because it's going to give you even more material to work with before the workshop starts. I'm so excited that you decided to take a little bit of time today and listen to this podcast. I think this information is incredibly valuable, and it's definitely going to change the way you teach starting now. I hope you'll also join me for the real deal in September at the beautiful Humani Pilates in Midtown Sacramento. Once again, you're going to want to register before August 15th to get the early bird special, and you can do that at skillfulteaching.com/workshops-and-retreats. If you want more information about Skillful Teaching in general, go to skillfulteaching.com and check out all the free information that's there, including the Thinking Pilates podcast, instructional videos, teacher interviews, the verbal cueing bank with hundreds of verbal cues to spice up your teaching, as well as online self-directed courses that you can start using today. Wishing you all a delightful week of teaching. Until next time, breathe deep and teach well.